I'm going to call to order Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections. House File 646, Representative Dietrich. She's here. And while they're sitting down, Representative Morgan?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 646. I recommend passage and referral to, well, I guess, to the General Registry.
I think so.
Is that right, Representative Eastman?
Yes, it is. And Mr. Chairman, I believe you have an amendment in your packet.
We have an amendment.
Technical amendment?
We do or we don't? We do.
So if I could get somebody to move that amendment.
Representative Morgan.
I will move, yeah.
It is the A1 amendment.
It's the A1? I'll move the A1 amendment to House File 646.
And Representative Dietrich, we do not have a quorum yet, so what we'll do is move the amendment, and when we get a quorum, we'll put the amendment in. It looks like it's simply clarifying, and it isn't anything substantial. So with that, Representative Dietrich, why don't you present your bill and your testifiers?
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. House File 646 makes a variety of changes to the election laws affecting school boards and other local units of government. I would like to highlight the major changes of the bill and then introduce testifiers who support this bill. Section 1 of the bill eliminates the requirement that in a case of a special election, local units of government get the approval of the county auditor before conducting the election by mail. Section 2 permits the local school board to make the decision whether or not to hold a primary election, in which that decision would need to be made then by June 1st. Section 3 sets the deadlines for filing affidavits of candidacy, whether or not the primary is held. And then finally, in Section 4, it confirms the school board's use of electronic voting systems. School board members support this bill, and I have Tom Deans here to testify to that support. And then in addition, I want to just mention right now, I believe that the public supports this bill, and I have a Champlin resident and previous school board candidate, Susie Scheller, here to testify to her support of the bill. So I think we'll go ahead, if it's satisfactory with you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dietrich, why don't we have Mr. Deans. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Deans. I'm legal counsel of the School Board Association. This is a School Board Association-sponsored bill. It was approved by the MSBA's Delegate Assembly. If I can just go through some of the fine points of the bill quickly. The first thing the bill does is when a special election is held by mail, it eliminates the requirement that the municipality go to the county auditor first for approval. And the counties have no objection to that provision. The county auditors don't run these elections. We run the elections, and that approval requirement is not necessary. It also clarifies the timeline for the notice that must be given. There must be a 53-day notice to the county auditor, because we give notice to the county auditor of all elections. It clarifies that the notice has to meet the requirements of the rule that relates to mail ballot elections. And it specifies that the mail ballot procedures are posted 6 weeks before the election. Right now it says they're given, and no one knows what that term means. Sections 2 and 3 basically put us back to the school board determining whether it's going to be governed by a primary law. Right now the law is mandatory. This would make it optional. The board would make the decision whether or not they are going to be covered by the primary prior to the time that you have filings or anything like that. And they can make that decision. This would treat school districts exactly the same way that we treat cities. Cities already have that option. Section 3 says, deals with the filing periods. If the board opts in and says it's going to have a primary, you're going to have to file earlier. If they're not going to have a primary, then your filings would be in September at the same time city filings are. The last section just clarifies that school districts can use electronic voting systems. As you know, or you may know, after December 31 of this year, all these elections have to be basically done electronically. But there's a whole bunch of procedures that used to be in the law if we were going to do electronic voting, because it was such an unusual way of doing it. You were going to vote by optical scan, and you had to jump through a lot of hoops. And unfortunately, we've got a lot of school districts that have moved forward and are using optical scan systems, and they've never gone through those hoops, and this just clarifies that they can do it. Two more quick points. The other day, you heard Representative Simon's bill that would move the state primary back to June, which is certainly your decision. It would, at least in the even year, that would move school district primaries back to June, which would move school district filings back to the first week, either the last week in March or the first week in April, depending on when you do that count. Which would mean if you file then, and you're basically, as a school board member, looking at a seven-month election period between then and November, and they're, we're really not very interested in that, in the and we don't think that that's necessary. But the board could make that decision. If they think it's necessary, they can opt into that system. Most of the primaries that have been held, this mandatory law has only been in effect for two election cycles. Most of them, not all of them, most of them that have been held eliminated one person from the ballot. There were some others that eliminated more, but most of them eliminated one. And in especially in the bigger districts, when that primary is held, that is a standalone election because none of the cities are having primaries, and especially in the odd year, we're the only ones that are out there. In 2005, Anoka's election cost $16,000. Hastings' election cost $24,000. Robbinsdale's cost $31,000. You know, that's the cost of a teacher or half a teacher that we don't believe, you know, we believe that money can be better spent, or that board can make a determination that that's so important. If you have a school district that always has 10, 12 people that file, that board understands what the dynamics are in their community, and they can make that decision. We have other school districts where they're scrambling to try to get three to file to fill three seats. I guess I would stand for any questions. Sure.
Mr. Dean, thank you for the clarification on the moving of the primary date that did come up yesterday in the discussion on Representative Simon's bill, and we had a rather different answer yesterday, so that is helpful. The bill is still in play,
yes,
as they say.
That would be in the even year.
Yes. But it does clarify a point. I think it was Grayson Poppy brought it up, the impact on local units of government when the primary date is moved. We have a quorum, so Representative Morgan is going to renew his motion on the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill is amended. And then any questions to Mr. Dean? Then I believe we have one more testifier. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, my name is Susie Scheller. I'm a resident of Champlin, Minnesota, and I was involved in a fall 2005 school board election, which did involve a primary in Anoka-Hennepin District. I am here to support the choice of school districts to choose whether or not they would include the primary from a candidate's perspective. You have heard some of the fiscal accountability arguments that the cost to the school district may outweigh the benefit to the community, and I would support that. As a candidate, one of the things that the primary does, if the candidate knows there's going to be a primary, it can discourage community participation in that local race. which is exactly what most school districts want to encourage, such as scrambling to get one candidate for one seat. So if a candidate, if I'm sitting there knowing I'm going to be involved in a primary and the increased cost, $500 or $1,000, to even get to a primary for a local race like that, it discourages that community participation that is so valuable at that school board level. So that is my first point in support of the school board choice. Secondly, the school district calendar does not coincide well with the ability for a candidate to inform the public of their positions prior to a primary election. Parents are a primary constituent base, a primary voter base for primary election, and at that point in time, they are rightly thinking about how to get their children prepared for the next school year. So as a candidate, I did not have a venue to communicate and inform the public. And when I had to incessantly force that venue at school, open houses and settings like that, that was not the right setting for that information, but it was a sort of a necessary thing in order to be able to have any information out there. So secondly, the lack of venue to inform parents was a problem for a primary election. A third point that I would like to make as a candidate, the primary gave a flavor of partisanism that I did not believe was appropriate in a local school district race. Regardless of why the primary was held, the perception for the community is that we're getting down to one candidate per party, such as a normal primary would do, and it did not provide the open dialogue that was necessary. It sort of lends the process to a partisanism. And because of the increased cost and extended campaign season, you had to, candidates were thinking more and more about endorsements or volunteerism from along party lines in order to sustain that type of election. So I believe it was detrimental to the open dialogue and the community process and the information available to citizens. And lastly, I would like to mention, too, that as you know, every school district is different, and particularly in a single-seat district based on geographic representation such as I was involved in, that can have an even more detrimental effect, I believe, than an at-large seat, because we're down to two candidates by law for a single-seat district. And in an at-large district, you may have three open seats down to six candidates, for instance, but you still have some flexibility and choice in that at-large vote that you don't have in a single-seat district vote. So, in short, I believe it was unnecessary, and I believe that the school district at that local level has the best ability to garner what's healthy in that primary election. So on behalf of candidates, I would support a choice for that primary as opposed to by law needing to do that to have a better community process. Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Members, any questions? Any questions on the bill? Is there anyone else that wishes to testify? Seeing no questions and no one else willing to testify, Representative Morgan will renew his motion that House File 646 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, committee.
Representative Hilty, I believe you're back with us.
That's all that comes off.
And we were not quite through the walkthrough. We were. Ms. Frazier's there, and Representative Hilty's there. Representative Morgan.
While Representative Hilty goes over there, may I take this moment to move the minutes of Tuesday, March 6th?
Representative Morgan moves the minutes. Is there any discussion?
Excuse me.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. May I amend my motion to include the minutes of March 7th as well?
All right. Two sets of minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Morgan. Representative Hilty, I believe House File 1110 was... I'll move it again, and this goes to finance with the understanding it will end up in Representative Kahn's division probably. So, but
was the motion, all right. Mr. Chair. To
so I'll move the bill to get it finance before us today. And then if Ms. Frazier could pick up where she left off, walking us through the bill, we were close to being finished, I believe.
I think that was section 24, 25.
All right. Ms. Frazier, we have a house research summary. I don't know if that would be more helpful to walk through rather than paging through the bill, or members, you can do it either way, I guess, but there is a house research summary there. That might be of more assistance to you. You have it? Ms. Frazier, welcome to the committee, and would you please identify yourself?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Beth Frazier, the Director of Governmental Affairs for the Secretary of State's Office. Could you remind me which section we were at in the walkthrough?
It was in the 20s, if I remember. Was it? 24. Roseanne Brock says 24, and she's almost never wrong. So.
Mr. Chair, I would point out that's what I said as well.
All right, so we have two. Ms. Frazier, I believe it's section 24.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, Section 24 does a couple of things. It has to do with jurisdictions that use vote by mail, which is used in very small jurisdictions in Minnesota. Those that have fewer than 400 voters may use this method of voting. Right now, the county auditor is prohibited from mailing out ballots to voters more than 20 days before the election. Since the absentee ballot period begins 30 days before the election, if there are voters that are going to be out of town during the 20 days beforehand and may not receive the ballot at home, they're coming in to do absentee balloting in person in the polling place. So the county auditors would like to be able to mail out the ballots 30 days ahead of time. But we want to be sure that everyone that meets the pre-registration deadline is mailed a ballot, even if the ballots are mailed out 30 days ahead of time. So to accomplish this, we would require a subsequent mailing 14 days before the election to be sure that everyone that had registered at least 20 days before has been mailed a ballot. The other thing that this section does is it allows jurisdictions who use vote by mail to arrange for election judges to come in at some point during the 30 days before the election to accept and reject the mail ballot, similar to what an absentee ballot board would do, and allows them to send ballots that have been rejected back to voters if they're rejected at least 5 days before the election, allowing voters who perhaps forgot to sign their ballot to actually have their vote counted. Section 25 is kind of paired with Section 43. Both of these sections have to do with the distance that people can be from the polling place. Right now, election judges have to monitor three different distances. The one in Section 25 has to do with individuals that aren't electioneering, that are just in or around the building. And so,
Frazier, you the phrase on or word, I guess, 1526, lingering, is that a technical term? Is it related to loitering?
Mr. Chair, I would direct you to ask Senate counsel that question. He might have technical information.
I was really hoping I could get it from the Secretary of State's office. I've seen people linger around that office. I wasn't sure if it was a linger or a loiter.
Mr. Chair, since the titles aren't actually considered when interpreting the statute, I'm not sure how important that title actually is.
Thank you for that clarification, because I walk up every day and walk back, and they're, you know, I've seen people linger in the skyway and then loiter in the skyway, and apparently when you loiter, security doesn't like it, so I wanted to make that distinction.
Well, Mr. Chair, election judges don't like it when you linger, which is why this provision is in the bill.
All right. Well, let's not loiter. Let's proceed.
Mr. Chair, currently, individuals like yourself are allowed to linger 100 feet from the doorway to the room in which the voting is taking place. In Section 43, individuals who are electioneering, so who are trying to solicit votes, who have a T-shirt with a candidate's name on it or a lawn sign, has to be 100 feet from the building in which the voting is taking place. unless you're on public property, in which case you can't be on the property at all. And having these three different distances is driving election judges crazy. They spend much too much time fighting with people about how far they're supposed to be from the voting. So this proposal, the two sections combined, puts in place just one boundary so that everyone who is lingering, loitering, or electioneering must be at least 100 feet from the building. This, of course, would empower election judges, give them the authority they need to remove people that shouldn't be there. They, of course, would not, if there were children on the playground within 100 feet of the school, force them to move to the swing set instead of the jungle gym or, you know, stop children from going to class. This would just give election judges the authority they need to remove people who don't need to be there. Section 26 has to do with whether or not the news media may photograph a voter. On its face, the law is currently silent on this issue. However, the Secretary of State's office, our interpretation of 16.5, which prohibits the media from making a list of people who have or have not voted, our interpretation of that has traditionally been that therefore you can't take a picture, because if you took a picture, then you could look at it and begin a list of who has and has not voted. But clearly this is not very clear. And so this provision is trying to provide clarity for election judges about whether or not the media is allowed to take photos of voters. And so 16.6 obviously requires the media to get a voter's consent in order to take a picture of a voter. Section 27 is the first of several sections throughout the bill that are very similar. Currently, counties and cities are required to publish sample ballots in the newspaper. And what we've learned is that in counties where there's more than one house race, for example, the sample ballots are not always very helpful for voters, because since the counties are only required to publish one, that's all they do. And so when you look at the sample ballot in the newspaper, it will say House of Representatives and then list multiple races. So when somebody's looking at the sample ballot, it's not clear to them necessarily which of the races they get to weigh in on. And so people sometimes get to the polling place and are surprised. Wow, I thought I got to vote in this race where that person's not on the ballot. That can also be true for congressional races if there's more than one congressional race in a county. So the Internet provides us now with the ability to be able to actually provide voters with the exact ballot that they would see. Currently, this technology is available on the Secretary of State's website. A voter can put in their address, and the exact ballot that they would see can be shown on the website. So what this provision does is it requires the counties to publish a sample ballot, to either publish it in the newspaper, as they've been doing, or they would have the choice of publishing, allowing voters to come up with their exact ballot on their website, as well as posting it on the newspaper's website and publishing a notice in the paper to let voters know that this is available and where they can find it. The other thing that this provision does is it requires that the sample ballots be ready 2 weeks before the election. I guess in this subdivision it's already clear it has to be ready 2 weeks, but it's throughout these similar provisions it standardizes that sample ballots have to be ready at least 2 weeks before the election. So Section 27 has to do with primary elections. Section 28 has to do with general elections. Section 29 is another of a series of sections throughout the bill. Currently, we do not believe that there is any statutory authority to cancel an election once one has been called. It may be done from time to time, but we don't necessarily believe that there's a statutory authority to do so. So what this provision does two things. One, it gives the authority to cancel an election once it's been called, but it also gives a deadline for doing so and a requirement to notify the county auditor at least 46 days before the election, because that's about when counties would begin working on the election. And, you know, once they've started working on it, it's not really fair to cancel it. Section 30 is similar to several other sections throughout the bill, which I think I described yesterday, requiring candidates for city elections who are write-ins to notify the city that they want their votes counted. Section 31 is another section having to do with sample ballot publication and is in place for municipal elections. Section 32 has to do with having the sample ballots available 2 weeks before the election. Section 33 and 34 have to do with canceling an election. Section 35 has to do with school board candidates needing to notify the clerk that they want their write-in votes to be counted. I believe that Representative Hilty actually has an amendment to delete this section as well as the following section, which has to do with school boards and the sample ballot issue. Section 37 and 38 have to do with canceling elections. Section 39 has to do with the post-election audit, which was put in place this past year for the first time, which required each county to hand count the votes in a certain number of precincts to make sure that the tabulators were counting the votes accurately. This section 39 clarifies that for the purposes of the requirements that the county auditor is the post-election review official, they may designate the municipal clerk. Since the precincts that will be counted are selected at the canvas of the state general election, they would need to notify the clerk within 24 hours since the audits need to happen within a very short period of time after that. Section 40 also deals with the post-election audit, and this past fall, as it was being implemented, there were questions about the legislative intent, and right now, if the hand count is off by more than one-half of 1% from the machine count, then it requires further hand counts of votes. So there were questions about the legislative intent and exactly what the trigger was. This section clarifies the legislative intent in a way that matches with the explanation that was done this fall and what everyone did, with the one exception that it allows for more leeway for the very smallest precincts. Currently, in precincts with fewer than 400 votes, one-half of 1% would mean that one vote difference required many more hand counts. So this is saying that it can be up to two votes off without triggering the further hand counts in those smallest precincts. Section 41 and many of the following sections deal with campaign reports from local campaign for candidates for local office. Section 41 requires that candidates provide contact information. It also adds a provision that mirrors what was put into state law last year, which would require the filing officer to withhold the address of an individual who's given over $100 if they sign a statement saying that they need this protection because they fear for their safety. So it's allowing those people to exercise their First Amendment rights and giving contributions of $100 or more, but providing the protection they need. Section 42 also has to do with local candidates. And currently, before providing an election certificate, candidates are supposed to file a certification that either they have filed all of their campaign finance reports or that they have spent very little money in the election. If the local government turns over the election certificate and the certification has not been turned in, then the officer who issued the certificate is guilty of a misdemeanor. What this does is it says, okay, the candidate who didn't file the certification is also guilty of a misdemeanor. The second subdivision has to do with penalties for turning in your reports late. As you know, as state candidates, there are currently penalties for you that accumulate day by day if your report is turned in late. There are currently no penalties in place for local candidates. And what this means is that the local government will send letter after letter after letter to the candidate, please turn in your report, it's late, please turn in your report. The only recourse they have is to go to the Office of Administrative Hearings. So what happens is they set up a hearing, they notify the candidate that the hearing is going to happen, and the day before the hearing, the candidate comes in and turns in the report, and a little while later, the local government receives a bill from the Office of Administrative Hearings for the work that they had to do. So the local government pays for the candidate not having turned in their report. So what this does is it sets up a schedule similar to what's in place for state candidates, saying that for every day late they have to pay $10 for up to a maximum of $200, and that if the Office of Administrative Hearings is brought into the process, this fee that's been paid would serve as the payment for the Office of Administrative Hearings. Section 43 is the second half of the distance from the polling place having to do with electioneering. Section 44 is the second half of a provision that I explained yesterday requiring affidavits of candidacy to require an original signature. Section 45 is the section that we have added at Representative House's request having to do with vacancies in the office of county commissioner. Currently, counties are required to have a special election in very short order. And with the amendment that Representative House requested, this would give counties the option of either having a special election or doing an appointment. If there's more than 2 years left in the term, then there would be a special election in conjunction with the next general election to fill that seat. Section 46 is another section having to do with petitions and when they may be signed. In this case, it's for charter amendments. Section 47 is another section having to do with candidates who want their write-in votes counted, in this case for hospital districts. Section 48 is an appropriation to the Secretary of State's office to implement this bill. Section 49 is a repealer, and it repeals several provisions. 200.04 eliminates the current Help America Vote Act complaint procedure, which we are replacing in another section in the bill. 201.061 subdivision 7 eliminates the requirement that election judges track the number of people who try to do same-day registration but aren't able to. So perhaps they bring the wrong identification and therefore are turned away. Since Election Day registration was put into place in the mid-70s. Election judges have been required to tally the number of people who come in but are unable to do same-day registration. But nothing is ever done with this data. The county never tallies how many people in the county failed. The state never tallies how many people in the state failed. So basically, at this point, it's busy work for election judges that we're saying they no longer need to do. 201.096 eliminates a redundant provision that would require school district clerks to be given access to the statewide voter registration system. This is already covered in 201.022, Subdivision 1, Paragraph 9. Section 203B.02, Subdivision 1A, eliminates experimental procedures that were used in 1991 and 1992. 203B.13, Subdivision 3A. I realized last night that there was an error in my summary, and I apologize for any confusion that may have caused. This provision has to do with absentee ballot boards, but I was incorrect in my summary in saying that it eliminated the language that allowed absentee ballot boards to count votes. What this eliminates is currently counties are required to send the absentee ballots and the applications to the precinct, which in most cases makes sense because then the election judges process the ballots, they make sure that all the information is on the outside of the envelope, and they match the signature with the application. If, however, you have an absentee ballot board that's already done all of that work, we don't think there's a need to send the applications to the precinct since the election judges won't look at them because the absentee ballots have already been accepted or rejected. So this just eliminates the requirement, if the ballots have already been accepted or rejected by an absentee ballot board, to send the applications to the precinct. And then Section 375.101, Subdivision 1 and 2. I don't know. Oh, yes. This has to do with Representative House's provision having to do with county commissioners and filling their vacancies. Council can probably weigh in on this. I'm wondering if we change the language from must to may, whether we should be repealing this, because this talks about the timeline for doing a special election. And so if the special election is optional, I don't know if we need to, if we should be repealing this entirely.
Mr. Gehring, do we... Ms. Frazier, let's see if Mr. Gehring can answer your question and give you a little rest.
Mr. Chair, that is a good question. I've just been speaking with Mark Shepard about that very thing. So,
why don't we let them work on that?
Yeah.
And we do have at least 14 amendments that I know of. Representative Hilty, do you have an amendment, the A1 amendment? Do you want to offer that amendment? We have it here. We haven't passed it out yet.
Yes, Mr. Chair. We would offer that amendment.
Mrs. Anderson has it, and if the page would get it, we'll pass it out. While it's being passed out, members, I want to remind everyone that we're being very accommodating to people in amendments. So I want to draw your attention to the stack of amendments and note that when you get to the A14 amendment, if you notice at the top of the A14 amendment, there's a date and a time. The time is 6:58 p.m. That means at 6:58 p.m. last night, Mrs. Anderson, Mr. Malander, Mr. Gehring, myself, are accepting amendments. And we're waiting to make sure these amendments are in our possession. This morning, these same individuals come in at least 7 o'clock in the morning. This is making for a very long day. So I wish members, we're going to be accommodating, but remember this puts a lot of stress on staff and on certain members who are with staff, making sure your amendments are copied and ready for today. So if members would remember that, we'll be accommodating, but we're not going to break staff doing it. Representative Brock.
Mr. Chairman, I think that that's a very fair question and statement that you're making, but I would just note that this is a pretty big DE amendment, and we didn't have much time to deal with all the significant changes that came forward in the DE amendment. So I appreciate what you're saying, but the changes were significant to Representative Hilty's
stuff. Representative Brock, and I spoke to that yesterday. Yeah. We did not have the amendment until late in the afternoon, and we got the amendment to you within 15 minutes of us getting the amendment. So I'm saying that not just to members sitting at the table, but to anyone in the room or who is listening or watching in the state. Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, I would move adoption of the A1 amendment.
Representative Hilty, why don't you walk us through that amendment? Or do members have it yet? Do we have the A1 amendment passed out? Everyone has it?
Basically, Mr. Chair, this is a cleanup language except for the deletion of the two sections that Ms. Fraser referenced earlier, but I'll have her explain the rationale for the changes.
All right. Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, members, 1.3, page 8, line 26, inserting the language non-forwardable, clarifies that the notice that under this section we would be, the Secretary of State's office would be required to send to every registered voter in an effort to clean up our list is non-forwardable, which means that it would be returned and would help us clean up the list. Page 15, line 11, is changing municipality back to town, which is the current statute. There had been a provision in the original bill, I believe, that would have expanded vote by mail, and that provision has been deleted from this bill. And so it makes sense. So the municipality went with the expansion of vote by mail, and if we're not going to be expanding vote by mail, it made sense to stay with the current language. Page 15, line 17, has to do with allowing jurisdictions using vote by mail to have election judges look at the ballots ahead of time and accept and reject them. Instead of making this a requirement, it's making it an option. All of the next set of lines on this amendment have to do with the timing of providing the sample ballot on either publishing it or putting it on the website, requiring that it be done at least 2 weeks before the primary. I actually think that page 16, line 22, on the amendment, so line 1.7, I think that the two on this line should be one. So I think it should be at least 2 weeks and then at least 1 week.
Mr. Gehring, is that correct?
To mirror the following provisions on this amendment.
Ms. Fraser, let's make sure. We haven't voted on the amendment yet, so we could incorporate that if that change has to be made.
Okay. So in each case, this would require that if the county or city is going to be putting the sample ballot on the website, that has to be done at least 2 weeks before the election. And if instead it's going to be published in the newspaper, that has to be done 1 week before the election. So that's what's done in each of these next six lines.
Mr. Gehring, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, if that's what the intent is, then...
All right. So, Representative Hill, do you want to incorporate that into your amendment? We haven't voted on it, so we could incorporate that.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right, so. All right. Mr. Gehring also wants to clarify the repealer question at this time, and if we can incorporate that into your amendment, we'll do that also. So, Mr. Gehring.
Right. Mr. Chair, I think in light of Representative House's amendments or additions to the bill, taking out the repealer in Section 375.101, Subdivisions 1 and 2, would be appropriate.
All right. So, Mr. Gehring, we would then strike the repealer. Is that correct? So Mrs. Anderson and you both will right. reflect.
Right. So on page 24, line 29, we'd be deleting everything after 3A.
Mr. Chair, I would incorporate that language into this amendment as well.
Mr. Gang, can you repeat what we're doing with the repealer?
Okay. So. We are taking out the repeal of Section 375.101, which deals with filling vacancies in the Office of County Commissioner. And by taking out the repealer, that means that the law as it stands currently remains in place. And then there's a potential if the committee accepted this amendment to amend that statute with Representative House's language.
All right, but what we're incorporating into Representative's amendment is we are striking the repealer. So why don't you just go through one more time the page and the line and what we are striking in this amendment from the bill.
Okay. So what we're doing, incorporating Representative Hilty's amendment into the A1 amendment, is an additional language. It says on page 24, line 29, deleting everything after 3A, the language. So the repealer will end with section 203B.13, subdivision 3A. Remaining language would be taken out.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we want to delete or repeal, since it refers to the sections referenced prior to
Representative, I was going to also say that I think we need the R repeal there. We're just deleting the and true 1 and 2, comma, right? Is that correct, Mr.
Right.
Gehring? We're keeping R repealed.
We're taking off the colon, semicolon there to the comma?
Yes. I'm just making sure that the minutes and the amendment reflect the same thing.
So, Mr. Chair, the language that would be removed is and 375.101 subdivisions 1 and 2 would come out. And then we would also make the technical correction to replace the and in the appropriate place.
Members, are we clear on what we're... Representative Howes, it's... Basically, your amendment done in the most convoluted way we could possibly do it.
Actually, I brought it in this morning, Mr. Chairman, to help make it easy. I was one of those.
That's all right, but I think we're doing it. It's just in a very strange way. But we're doing it for you. Okay. All right. So is there any discussion on Representative Hilty's amendment? That's the motion before us.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Frazier.
I didn't finish going through it. Would you like me?
Yes. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
On line 1.14 and 1.15, we're deleting sections 35 and 36, which have to do with school board candidates, which I explained as we went through the bill, having to do with the write-in provisions and posting the sample ballot. On line 1.16, page 22, line 30, this is making Representative Howes' provision optional instead of required. Page 24, line 26, this has to do with the appropriation, giving the Secretary of State's office funds for implementing the entire bill, not just the first half of the bill. And that's the amendment.
Any further discussion to Representative Hilty's amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Now, we have a series of amendments, so I'm not too sure if we want to just go down, starting with A2, and if they're going to be offered enough for resident broad.
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering, I have a question before we start the amendments. Is that in order at this time?
Yes, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Frazier, can you go back to, I was listening to the explanation on page 15, and I think actually it's in a couple other places as well, but this is the one that that I have marked. In regards to sending the votes or the replacement ballot to the absentee voters, how often has this occurred previously, or is this something new? And what I'm wondering about is that if a voter who votes absentee has an opportunity to change their vote or to fix their ballot, but a voter at the polls does not have that opportunity once they've voted, I'm wondering if we're setting up a disparity in terms of people have an opportunity to fix things. Maybe I'm not understanding it right.
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, the language that appears here on 15.17 to 15.22, allowing absentee ballots to be accepted and rejected, mail ballots to be accepted and rejected prior to the election and returned if they're rejected at least 5 days before the election, mirrors language that's currently in place for the use of absentee ballot boards. Voters at the polling place do have a chance to correct their ballots, and that if they have overvoted, the machine will spit it out. With absentee ballots, there are other reasons that a ballot could be rejected. For example, if you forgot to sign your ballot for an absentee ballot, if your signature, if there's some discrepancy, if they don't think the signatures match, your ballot might be rejected. And so because it's more complicated, I think it gives those voters an extra chance. They wouldn't know that their ballot hadn't been accepted. Whereas if you're at the polling place and the machine spits out your ballot, you're there and you know that there's a problem with your ballot.
Representative Brown.
Thank you.
All right. Any further questions before we proceed with amendments? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess as we were going through this, I wrote myself a note here on the next page, 16.21, that section there, section 27, regarding the electronic or putting it on the web. You're taking away the requirement that it be in the newspaper, so that if somebody doesn't have a computer, doesn't want a computer, doesn't want to get them in, there are still some neophytes out there, they would then no longer have access to a sample ballot at all. Am I correct in saying that?
Ms. Frazier?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, kind of. this gives the county auditor the option of either printing it in the paper or providing it on the website. So our hope is that the county auditors would have a sense of what the sample ballot would look like, how useful it would be, the population that they're serving. There would be a notice in the paper that the sample ballot would be available so that if somebody wanted to, they could access the computer. But you're right. The sample ballot itself would not necessarily be in the newspaper.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I guess that concerns me a little bit because I can, just off the top of my head, one being my mother, that don't have any desire ever to learn how to use a computer. And there's some people that are younger than that don't use computers that I've worked with in the past. So, I mean, there are a few people out there that still are in that range. We all sometimes take it for granted that everybody knows how to get on the net. And when it would be go to putting everything on the net and that's the only place you can get noticed, it troubles me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, that was my first reaction when I saw this proposal. And it was only when I came to understand that what's printed is actually not very helpful for voters, and in some cases is causing more confusion, that we came around to going with this proposal. But I do think it's a legitimate concern.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm probably going to echo the same remarks. A lot of people in my district do not have computers, don't have access to computers, and I don't truly believe it's confusing in the newspaper because I know my local paper would print the sample ballot that includes Representative Moe, and then they would have a sample ballot that includes me. So it's very obvious to people that there are two different candidates, but in different House seats. So I'm hoping that you and Representative Hilty would look at this a little bit, and hopefully by the time it hits the floor, you could allow the county auditors to do that, but don't take away the power or the force that we're making them put it in the paper, because it does help in my district.
I believe also we have someone who wants to testify to this provision. So why don't we, this could be someone who is familiar with newspapers. Welcome to the committee and please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Sandy Nair, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Newspaper Association, and I do appreciate Representative Nelson's and Representative Howe's comments. We did work with the Secretary of State's office on this particular provision. We certainly would be more comfortable if it was still in the newspaper, and the simple way to do that would be to, on the page 16, line 21, to change the order to an and require it to also be in the newspaper. I will say that that's historically what we've done with most of these proposals that we've seen over here over the years. Is we suggested that you put it in multiple places, not just in the newspaper. People get their news in a lot of different ways, and we think the law should acknowledge that. So in other areas where we have worked with different proponents of taking notices out of newspaper, we have suggested just putting it in multiple places, not just newspapers. So on that issue. But I also wanted to briefly address one other concern. Representative Hilty and the Secretary of State's office have been wonderful in meeting with the newspapers about a number of concerns that we had with this bill as introduced. And one of our larger remaining concerns is Section 26 of the bill dealing with photographs and polling places. Historically, there was no law on this issue at all. The law was silent on whether or not the news media had access to the polling place. But by custom and usage, they were given access, and they took photographs, and nobody ever made us think about it. And about 4 or 5 years ago, an individual county attorney apparently asked the Attorney General's office for clarification of whether or not the news media had access to polling places. I think it was after this county attorney tripped on a TV wire and got a little irritated, is what I was told. The Attorney General admitted that there was no statutory right for the news media to have access, but suggested that the legislature address the issue, which you did in the 2004 session. The language that you see in the current law is only 2.5 years old. And the news media worked very closely with local city and county officials to craft this compromise by saying we can't approach voters, we can't talk to them, we can't come within 6 feet, we can't interfere with the voting process. And we were very comfortable with this language. When we met with the local officials, we did have lengthy discussions about the issue of photographs and how that should be addressed. And after much discussion with the local officials, they agreed to leave the law silent on it and let photographs continue to be taken, because they, I think, thought that there was more benefit to the public by having the news media show people voting, remind people that it was voting day, and encourage people to go out and exercise their right to vote before the polls closed. That's commonly what these pictures are. And they're usually not of one individual. They're pictures of the entire polling place. So for the news media to have to get someone's permission or try and figure out who may object, may not object without being able to talk to the voters because of the other restrictions in the law makes it, we think, unworkable to have a provision like this in law. So we'd ask you to consider possibly taking this section out of the bill. And Representative Hilty has been very kind in considering this, and I know hopefully is still considering it, as is the Secretary of State's office. So, but that, we think, is the practical problem. We don't see how we can either get permission or even permit someone to object. And we hope that you'll weigh it here. It's a balancing test, of course. We think there's more benefit to the public by the news media putting something on television at 5 o'clock or putting something on a newspaper website during the afternoon, showing a picture of people voting and then saying, go out and vote. Don't forget to vote today.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just have an additional comment maybe about that, because I realize that it's a newspaper that's doing it, but many times the television is doing the same thing. So is this saying that the newspaper cannot photograph, but it's silent on whether or not other people from the television station can be there and actually be doing some media?
Mr. Chair, Representative
Ms. Hoffman.
This would impact both the newspapers and television. The language would prohibit either the way it's being proposed. So the current law being silent permits either television or newspapers. And I know a lot of people think this might be just a television issue because they're the ones who are going to show it probably in a timely fashion. But more and more newspapers have their own websites that they update on an hourly basis that show pictures also of people voting and encourage people to go vote. So it's an issue that impacts both of them. It's my understanding that the reason this proposal is here is because one individual was offended when her picture was in the newspaper. It wasn't that her picture was in the newspaper she was upset about, but that she thought it was an unflattering picture that was in the newspaper. So I hope we don't change state law because someone's offended about the quality of their picture.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I completely agree with Ms. Murin that having video on TV reminding people that it's election day probably helps get out the vote. The primary concern is not this individual who had an unflattering picture. The primary concern has to do with people's safety and that battered women and others who don't want people to know where they are and who somebody could track them down by seeing the video of somebody at a particular place, that they might be discouraged from voting or afraid to go vote if they knew that the media could take their picture. The Senate committee heard this bill last night, and instead of requiring that they get the voters' consent, addressed this concern by saying that the media may photograph a voter unless they object. So that's an alternative for the committee to consider. But the real issue, I think, is people's safety. And I have some other thoughts on the other provision about sample ballot, but I don't want to confuse the conversation.
Well, I think Representative Boltrager had a question on this point. So,
well, actually, Chair members, I just wanted to echo. I thought Ms. Murin makes a very common sense, practical argument, and I am a little bit concerned about making a bill so, I don't know what, watertight for every possible concern. And I just reject some of that. I can't worry about every little single thing because if I do, this bill, I feel, is going to fall on its own weight.
Ms. Neer, do you want to respond to that?
Mr. Chair, thank you for the kind comments. I do think it's a balancing test. I do think there's more advantage to the public in letting the media take these pictures. I think, practically speaking, it would be very difficult for us to get permission or permit a whole group of people to object because commonly the pictures are of the entire polling place.
Representative Connolly, to this point.
The Chairman, that current language sounded pretty good to me, if everyone agrees with that.
Is that a suggestion or an amendment?
Yeah. Well,
Mr. Chair.
It's a suggestion until I hear from
Representative Hilke. Well, let's talk to the sponsor of the bill first. We'll start there. Representative Hilke.
Two things, Mr. Chair. First of all, I think Representative Emmer was going to point out that he has an amendment that would address this, which we probably should consider. But this language in this section is my language. I was aware of the language in the Senate to which Representative Kahn just referred, which says that you cannot photograph, or you can photograph a voter unless they object. And my observation about that was they would have to know they were being photographed before they could object. And I think it puts an onus on the voter that actually should belong on the photographer rather than the photographee.
Right. So
I anticipated having a further discussion about this at some point.
Well, if we could maybe focus on what we're dealing with while we're dealing with it, it might be helpful. And Representative Emmer, is the A9 amendment your amendment? Is that, I'm looking at it right now.
Yes, it is, and I actually had two amendments.
Is the A9 the one that might...
A9 is more consistent with what has just been discussed.
So, Representative Emmer, do you want to move the A9 amendment at this time while we're on this point, Representative House?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it appears that someone might...
Oh, yes, we have one. We do.
...apply to that point.
All right. Members, why don't we look at the A9 amendment while we have one more person. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself. Is it to this point?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm Mai Thor, and I'm an advocate with the Minnesota Disability Law Center, as well as the Voting Rights Coalition. To this point about the media and having to get permission to take photographs while they're voting in the polling place, I do want to bring up a couple of considerations as far as privacy issues. There are voters, you know, Ms. Fraser alluded to that just a minute ago, who are in situations where they want to have their privacy respected while they're out doing their civic duty when they vote. And this includes women who may, fear for their safety, and also people with disabilities who are considered a vulnerable adult under Minnesota statute. And so we have to consider these individuals as well when we are talking about the media and whether or not they can just take photos without getting the permission of the voter beforehand. And I think that that is a key word in this provision, is just being able to get permission from the voter, for whatever reason, whether you're afraid you might look bad after the photo is taken or because of those privacy issues, specifically for people with disabilities who are considered vulnerable adults and are wards of the state or are under guardianship, you know, they always have to get permission before their photo is taken or before they are included in any kind of media. I just wanted to have that put out there as well and to be considered by the committee. The other point I wanted to make along this line is just the fact that once information is put out in the media, it is public information, and there is always the possibility that that information could be spread widely and, you know, turn up at any blog at, you know, some point in the future where many people could see it and, you know, just forward it on to other sources. And so, that is another consideration as well. So that's all of my comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilke, you want to weigh in at this time, or should we consider Representative Emmer's amendment?
Well, Mr. Chair, as I said, I realized that this was an issue. I've had discussion with Ms. Darren about it. I'm aware of the difference between the language that we have in this bill and that in the Senate, and my preference would be to, for the time being, leave this as it stands and have further discussion as the bill goes forward.
Representative Winkler, to this point.
Mr. Chair, if we're continuing with the debate on this particular provision, I'd weigh in, or if we're going to consider an amendment, I'd wait, but I'm kind of looking for guidance.
I hope I don't have an amendment before us. What I have is a suggestion. But if you want to weigh in on the provision.
I'm interested in discussing an amendment, not as much a suggestion. Mr. Chair.
Well, we don't have an amendment before us. So if you wish to,
Mr. Chair,
discuss this point, it would be a good time to do it. Otherwise, Representative Emmer.
Mr. Chair, I will move the A9 amendment.
Now we do have a motion before us, the A9 amendment. Members. Representative Emmer, why don't you explain your amendment? I think it's pretty close to the Senate language that was discussed earlier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe it is. Members, I actually had both the A8 and the A9. We've moved the A9. The A8 would have eliminated this provision because I frankly think it's unworkable. This is like someone out in a public park that's being photographed and you're going to have to get their permission, or they're going to the theater, they're shopping, they're at a sporting event. I think this is a very dangerous direction to travel. But not knowing what the committee would feel and not having an understanding because of the late hour that I turn these in, what the author might feel, I also drafted the A9, which is more consistent with the Senate language in that it allows the photographs to be taken unless the individual objects.
All right. Any further discussion on the A9 amendment? Representative Hilty, you want to be specific to the A9 amendment and your position? I think you already have, but why don't you for the record on the A9 amendment, which is now before us?
Well, Mr. Chair, I have a feeling that the A9 amendment is likely to be adopted, but for the record, I still oppose it.
All right. Any further discussion on the A9 amendment? All right, all those in favor of the A9 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Member, we can eliminate the A8 amendment then, too. All right. I have before us the A2 amendment. This Representative Nelson.
Going back to the what we originally started out talking about, all right. In the publication in 1621, and I think we'd have to do it also on 17.3 and on 17.26, changing those ors to ands so that in all those provisions where electronic posting, so that people that are not computer literate, do not own computers, do not even know how to turn one on, would still be able to have access to those notices.
All right, Representative Nelson, you're moving an amendment that is not one of our amendments in writing. The suggestion, I believe, was of Ms. Guerin on how to make this more flexible. So would you tell us once again, and then Mr. Guerin can record it, this is an amendment, then.
This is an amendment,
so
yes.
So you are moving what you are...
I'm moving an amendment, and Mr. Guerin can correct me and help me here, but I believe it would be on 1621, changing that or to an and, on 17.3, that or to an and on 17.26, that or to an and. All those provisions for publication of sample ballot on the Internet, so that's done in both places.
And Mr. Guerin, do you have that?
I'm sure that I believe I do, although I should maybe clarify, do you want to make that change to each of the references?
Yes.
Or there's the option, because that goes throughout the entire bill rather than just the ones that you mentioned.
Well, there's other places I'm not aware of. Yeah, I guess that's...
All right, so wait a second. Let's make sure Mr. Guerin is clear on where these changes have to be made. So the references that Representative Nelson made, there would have to be other places in the bill where these changes would have to be made.
Correct.
And...
So I believe the references would be on page 16, line 21, page 17, line 3, page 17, line 26, and page 18, line 30.
Right. Mr. Gregg, why don't you...
Each of those places we're deleting or and inserting and.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I believe on 18, line 30, we deleted that section from the delete all amendment. With the A1 amendment.
Yes. 35 and 36 are deleted, so you'll be correct. Those are gone. Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, on the A1 amendment that we did adopt, we have two different time standards. One is 2 weeks for the website, 1 week for the newspaper. And in my community, I believe that my newspaper posts sample ballots for 2 weeks and is very helpful to do so. Is your intent to do 2 weeks and 2 weeks, or is it 2 weeks? Is 2 weeks and 1 week okay with you doing both activities? Just out of curiosity.
That's but my
Nelson.
Mr. Chair, that's kind of my intent, is to leave that the same, what was already amended. It was more so that we give the people that don't have computer access, don't know how to run a computer, don't, the access, the ability to access a newspaper.
All right.
Newspaper.
All right. Well, Mr. Guerin is writing all the places in the bill where this needs to be done, and we're still on Representative Nelson's amendment. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have someone who would like to testify on this amendment, Ms. Smith, who's the elections director from Anoka County.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Rachel Smith. I'm the election supervisor for Anoka County. And I just wanted to give sort of a metro perspective on what kind of where this came from and give some address, Representative Nelson, some of your concerns regarding Internet access. First of all, one of my concerns with the proposed amendment would be that some counties don't have the capability to get the sample ballots on the website. So we want to make sure that it was an either-or. So that they wouldn't be, counties wouldn't be required to do both the website and the paper because they may not have the capability to do the sample ballots on the website right now. Secondly, let me, from a Metro County perspective, remember that we have multiple ballot styles, meaning that for each polling place we have, you know, some in Anoka County, for example, we could have up to 150 type of ballot styles. And in some precincts, more than one ballot style. So when we publish in the paper, it's every office that can possibly come up in Anoka County, and we get so many phone calls from folks if they've seen the sample ballot in the paper and they don't understand why there's multiple offices on it that they're not eligible to vote for, and. For those to help address the concerns regarding the Internet access, frequently we'll also receive phone calls from people requesting information on their sample ballot, and we send those, we send copies of the sample ballot to folks all the time. We will also send sample ballots to assisted living if we get a request, or nursing homes, of course we do advanced absentee voting. So there's other ways that we think we might be able to address some of those concerns. The sample ballots are also posted at all the local government offices ahead of time as well. So those are just two ideas that I wanted to share with you that we are currently doing that I would hope would address some of those concerns.
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, since I think there are some counties that would have technical problems posting the ballots on their website, instead of saying that both are required, you may want to keep, if you're going to go in this direction, and Ms. Smith didn't reassure you that we don't need to, you might want to keep the current requirement that it be published in the paper and then allow counties and municipalities to do it on the website. Although many of them are, so maybe they don't need that permission.
But. Okay, Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I think Ms. Smith makes some good points, but Representative Nelson's concerns are certainly just. My suggestion is it's pretty clear we're not going to get through all these amendments today. Maybe Representative Nelson and Mr. Gehring could put the wording together in this that in a way that will work for Ms. Smith and other county administrators and come back at our next meeting with something in writing that we can all see and work with.
And I would add in a timely fashion.
I would say, Mr. Chair, to that suggestion, looking at the clock, and I think that might be, I will withdraw my amendment for now and work with Mr. Gehring, because even though she's assured me, the people I'm talking about that I know live in Hennepin and Anoka County, they're not rural people, and I think there are more people in the metropolitan area that are computer illiterate than we seem to take advantage of. A lot of us, like I said, that work on computers all day long think that everybody does. And there's a lot of people out there that I talk to on a regular basis that don't want to ever learn how, and they want to go to their grave without ever having turned one on. And so I think we need to work on this. We don't want to limit their access to that information.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to belabor this issue, especially since we're going to take it up later, but I just wanted to point out that over the past few years, I've had a lot of contact with elections officials all across the state, and one of the things that has become very clear to me is that they all want to do the very best job that they can, and no one is trying to keep any information from voters. I think what the intent of this provision is to give them the latitude to do what they think is the right thing. And I don't think that we would find very many elections officials in this state who would be doing anything that would actually keep information that they felt was vital for voters to have from them.
All right. Representative Kalin's next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to provide a little bit of guidance to Representative Nelson, or at least advice, suggestion, as we work out an amendment to bring before this committee later, that I think leadership, news readership is declining, print news. I think I'd like to see the website requirement stay rather than an option. I think the option exists now. We don't have to write that in the law, in the statute. And just that my county, which now has a very wonderful website, but is on their third iteration of a website. It's hard for me to imagine that even the most rural counties that have face backbone technology challenges can't do this. So I'd like to see both pieces in there.
Representative Howes, you raised the same concern that Representative Nelson did. He has withdrawn his amendment. They're going to work on it for tomorrow. Since we're not going to finish the bill anyway, so you may want to assist Representative Nelson in that amendment. Representative Brock.
Mr. Chairman, I think that we might be trying to fix something that isn't broken, maybe we could just go back to the original language, and that might be something that we talk about. Representative Nelson, I have the same concern. It just seems to me that the counties are going to, Representative Hilty, do what they think is best, but at the same time, we want to make sure that the information is out there. I don't know that requiring a website is the way to go, but if you have the ability, which I heard Ms. Smith say that they already are doing in many cases, it seems to me that the original language is much better.
Mr. Chair, that was the suggestion I was going to make. If you just return to current law and delete these sections from the bill completely, it will go in newspapers and it will go on websites, because current law mandates that when newspapers print public notices in their newspapers, they also must put it on their website. And that's a mandate on the newspapers in current law. So currently they are going to newspapers and on websites.
You get another option for us.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think we're finished with this one. So let's move to the A2 amendment. Is there anyone who wishes to offer the A2 amendment?
That would be my amendment, Mr.
Representative Poppy.
Yes, I, Mr. Chair and members, I do offer the A2 amendment. I have some personal experience with this one, and I also am aware of some other instances where the term re-elect was used in the campaign, and may have been done so just because the language currently is confusing. So what this does is actually define what the term re-elect, who can use that term re-elect when they're campaigning, and also it does also define incumbent as far as for the purposes of those people who are currently office holders seeking to be re-elected to the same office. There is something that I would like to add, though, for the amendment.
Representative Poppy.
And that's just an oral amendment that would be inserted on page 1, obviously line 7, after the period, to insert if the incumbent is seated in that office but was not elected to the office in a general or special election, the incumbent may not use the term re-elect for the purposes of the people that may be appointed.
Let's go slowly on that one. Mr. Gehring, we'll go very slowly.
I believe maybe Mr. Gehring would be able to.
You already have it?
Yes.
Mr. Gehring, why don't you repeat the. We're going to incorporate this into Representative Poppy's amendment.
So the additional language that we're incorporating into A2 is after the period on line 7. A new sentence reading, if the incumbent is seated in that office but was not elected to the office in a general or special election, the incumbent may not use the term re-elect.
Is everyone clear on that? All right. So that is the amendment. Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, I have no objection to the amendment. I would point out, however, that this is a campaign finance issue, and it's referring, I believe, to a different section of law than we're dealing with in this bill. But nonetheless, I have no problem with the amendment.
Welcome to government operations, Representative Hope. Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I don't have a problem with it either, but I agree with Representative Hilty that this is a campaign finance issue, and the majority might want to take into account that this opens up a whole set of discussions on the House floor.
Thank you for that notice.
Point well taken, Mr. Chair.
You know,
otherwise, we might not have any discussion on this bill.
Representative Hilty, Representative Broad, I'm going to go to Mr. Gehring and for a clarification on what this is and what it is not. Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, I just want to clarify that this is amending Chapter 211B, which is fair campaign practices. It's not Chapter 10A, which is campaign finance regulation.
So it apparently does not open up any new chapters of law, but just opens up new areas of debate. Which, considering we have 14 amendments and probably climbing for tomorrow, we're going to be fine. Well, we don't have any for tomorrow. We're going to have the bill here tomorrow. I have a hunch we'll have more amendments, but maybe not. Any further discussion to this amendment? Members, I don't see us finishing this bill today. That's why, I mean, there could be more amendments tomorrow, and this may be the never-ending Secretary of State's housekeeping bill.
Mr. Chair, I think the question is, this being Thursday, when is tomorrow?
I'm sorry. My tomorrow is exactly Tuesday of next week. I only think in terms of when I have to be right here. That's my tomorrow. All right, members. Any further discussion? Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question about subpart C here. For purpose of this section, incumbent means the individual currently seated in the office for which the election will be held. I just want to clarify intent that means the type of office. I'm thinking over the redistricting situation where incumbent A and incumbent B are put into a newly numbered, newly configured district. May they use the term reelect, even though each of them has a piece of the new district. I just want to clarify that the office means the type of office. They may each use the word reelect.
Mr. Gehring?
Yes, for clarification, in paragraph B, it deals with the redistricting situation, and you can use the term reelect in a campaign for elective office unless the candidate is incumbent of that office and represents, and the new office represents any part of the new district. So,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just a inquiry to the chair and Representative Poppe as well. I do believe we will have a bill coming before the committee next week that addresses this particular chapter of law. I see Representative Simon nodding his head, so I'm wondering if perhaps Representative Poppe might want to hold off and put it on that bill, but it's merely an inquiry and raising it as an option.
Representative Kalin, to the point of when tomorrow is, this bill will be with us next week.
I do believe we're working in, as you mentioned, Mr. Chair, we're working in base three of tomorrow's.
Yes. Representative Pop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that information, Representative Kalin. This bill before us had a lot of opportunities to be able to amend to it because there was a lot of information here. So I was choosing to do it today. I can withdraw the amendment and move things along. I guess I'd just as soon do that probably if there is a more specific bill.
Representative Poppe, I think the bill is here, the amendment is here. Let's deal All with right. it today while we still comprehend what we're dealing with.
Mr. Chair, one
yes,
other thing
Representative
to Representative Simon's comment. Yes, I think that there was a sense of needing to clarify incumbent based on the office, so you couldn't go from the city council to, you know, county commissioner and be able to include the same amount and be able to say that you were reelected.
Representative Morgan, you have a question. Is that why you're leaning forward?
I would encourage Representative Poppe to follow through with her initial decision to withdraw this until a later date when a bill that is more apropos to this amendment comes before us, as Representative Kalin has suggested. That's all. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Representative House.
As the minority party, I would also make that same recommendation because I really enjoy this committee, but it's getting a lot like the Hotel California. We can check off, but we can't leave.
You know, Representative Howes, I was beginning to think it was Spinal Tap, but it's up to Representative Poppy. She's the sponsor of the amendment.
I perhaps could put it on each and every one of these bills. Could I not? Maybe then, you know, the point would be made. But I guess I will keep it where it's at and keep it in this bill. And if it goes down because people don't think it's appropriate, then we'll just stand with that.
And with that, seeing no further, Representative Rod.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Poppy, would you be willing to, one thing that has been brought to my attention in other races around the state is that the use of the word for example, for state representative or state representative, the incumbent would say State Representative John Smith. And the use of the word for the challenger as a requirement. Do you have any opinion on that so that the challenger is not being seen as the incumbent?
Representative Poppy.
I hadn't thought about that, so I don't know that I'd have an opinion about that, but that's one of the questions that would be raised. I guess that would be additional language that probably could be put in here to be talked about, but thank you for the question. I don't have an opinion about that.
All right. Any further discussion to the A3 amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Members, we're rapidly running out of time, and we're not going to get through the rest of the amendments unless someone has a non-controversial amendment in this stack.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my first one went so well. I have high hopes.
You're doing well. One for one. Let's not press it. Representative Brock.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think I have one that we could do rather quickly.
Which one?
It's actually just here.
Representative House, you're right. Hotel California.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we've already had a discussion. I would move that we just strike Section 27.
Section 27.
Pardon me, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we strike the new language, replace it in Section 27 so that we're going back to the way that the statute originally read.
All right. The amendment before us is, Mr. Gehring, why don't you, or Mr. Shepard, Mr. Gehring, exactly what is Representative Broad doing with Section 27?
Mr. Chair, I believe Representative Broad wants to delete Section 27 in its entirety so that the language as it exists currently would stay in place.
All right. Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad and Representative Nelson, another option would be the current language in the bill allows the county to either do the website option or continue to publish it in the paper. If they do the website option, they still have to post a notice saying, here's where you can find a sample ballot. You could add to that requirement that they say, if you would like a sample ballot sent to you, please call the following number. So then the person would get the accurate information. So that's just another option for your consideration.
Representative Nelson.
If we're going to delete Section 27 and the other ones that are through the bill here that have that website notice, I think we'd have to do all three of them. I think we'll go back to what I suggested earlier, that we'll work with Mr. Guerin and come up with language that works for both sides. And I think that would be a better thing at this time than to go do this now.
Which will be tomorrow, which is Tuesday.
Which tomorrow.
Mr. Chairman, I'll withdraw my amendment at this time. I just thought it was going to be a simple one.
Well, added to the list. Rep. Howes, did you have a question on this? You
did.
make a comment, but I'll save it.
Yes. Members, what we'll do is lay this bill over until Tuesday, and if you have amendments, yes, and if everyone would put everything back in the folder so we don't have to run everything off again, it would be appreciated by staff greatly. Save in the save folder, and Representative Hilty and Ms. Frazier, thank you for being patient, and we'll see you Tuesday. And with that, meeting is adjourned.